Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And I have had caffeine. Now, we have a lot of interesting stories. We were actually, just before we hit record, we were talking about the young man.
Oh, yes.
No, I don't know the rest of the lyrics, but really we were talking about the YMCA.
Yeah.
Not the, you know, institution that is the YMCA.
Yeah.
But rather the institution which is the song.
Yeah,
the YMCA.
It's a nice light story. Victor Willis, he is one of the members of the Village People, one of the last surviving members of the Village People.
Is he like the guy that relaunched the Village People with just him and four new guys?
Himself, four new guys, and one of them who is still alive was sort of sticking around touring with him. He just had no interest in being on stage again in his, would have been like 60s at the time. He's like, not interested.
I remember he did an interview with Good Morning Britain, and it's like this guy in his like 60s in like leather chaps.
Yeah.
And four young men in like the 20s to 30s.
Okay,
yeah. And they asked the question, is it really a reunion tour when it's you?
Huh?
And essentially four backup singers. Like, is that really... Are we seeing the Village People or a Village Person plus, you know?
There's a prog rock group called Yes. And I know all about Yes because it's my mom's favorite band. Or at least for decades it was. I don't know where she sits now. It's probably still her top five.
Anyway, no, I'm talking queer.
Point being, Yes was one of those bands where they would like, you know, the drummer would trade off and they'd get a new drummer. And then the guitarist would trade off and get a new guitarist. And they would slowly morph over time. And then eventually the original band was completely gone. And now Yes was a new band. Then what happened is the original band wanted to go on tour and sing their own songs. But the label wouldn't let them because there was a current band called Yes. So what happened was the original members of Yes just formed under their names, Anderson, Walkman, Bruford, and Howe. And then you had the Anderson, Walkman, Bruford, and Howe tour where they opened for Yes. And because they were playing on the same stage as Yes, Yes permitted them, quote unquote, to play their songs, quote unquote. So they actually mixed new songs, old songs, and then the current Yes was singing current Yes songs. So it was this really interesting thing. And actually that album is a pretty good album. I'm warm to prog rock, but I wouldn't listen to it on the regular, and that actually is a pretty good album. But anyway, so yeah, we're talking about this guy in the YMCA. He recently said, like, you know, he's getting old, and before he dies, he needs to let the world know the song YMCA is not about gay sex. He doubled down and made sure that everybody understood. There are a lot of Village People songs that are about gay sex.
In the Navy.
In the Navy, yeah. Fire Island, yeah.
I mean, they're not necessarily, but maybe metaphors alluding to...
Well, the song Cruisin' is about gay sex. Undeniable.
Yeah, I mean, that one's on. That one's... There's no reading between the lines.
Yeah, yeah,
you just
no,
read
no.
the lyric.
It's Cruisin', yeah. YMCA, he said, was actually just in praise of the Young Men's Christian Association as an institution. In the 70s, like, a lot of gay men would run away from home and go to Chicago and New York and L.A., and they would need somewhere to stay. And at the Y, you could get, like, a room with a bed and a door that locks for, like, $10 a night. And that was fine. And that it was really good for social mobility in the States at the time. And it was a safe place to go. And then they had the gym. And then they had, like, dietitians and stuff like that. They're just basically saying, no, it actually was just in praise. It would be like if now somebody did like a Good Life Fitness song or a song about, what's the gym that only has women in it? That's Good Life, isn't it?
Curve or something?
Curves, yeah. That's right. Because Curves does a really good service as well. So if you did a song about curves and it was not a metaphor about sex, that would be... But you would think that if you did a song about Curves Gym that it would be a metaphor about like Big Booty or something like that.
I don't know. I'm getting like Mika's Big Girls.
Yeah, yeah, if you're just genuinely like, Curves is a good gym, they provide a good service, and you made that into a 2-minute and 34-second pop song... And then people, like, it's the exact same phenomenon. So, yeah, YMCA is not
it's
about
weird
gay.
That this 70s, very gay, apparently not gay song has caused so much news. I like the song. I can see it at school discos. I don't know if schools have discos anymore. I mean, not right now with the whole end of the world thing. Like, you know, at a school dance. Am I showing my age by saying that, like, YMCA at a school dance?
I think the fact that you're calling it a disco is aging you a little bit.
I think I'm aging me up.
Yeah.
I believe, actually, we went
to... Oh, I do like to boogie at the discotheque.
You know, back in my day with, you know, the moving pictures. No, he was...
Yeah, actually, when people make fun of boomers, and I don't like ageism. I think it's crass and gross. And I like to remind them that, like, like the boomers were the ones who went to Studio 54 and like, that's fine.
Well, let's move on. Let's talk about the fact that a couple of places with names have decided that those names for those places may not be the best. Now, first of all, did you hear about asbestos?
Asbestos Quebec?
Yes.
Yes.
Not the incredibly poisonous material that causes cancer.
There's a lot of cities in Northern Ontario and Quebec that are named after the local minerals. So there's, as well as asbestos, there's also Cobalt Ontario. And in Quebec, there's Val-d'Or, which is the Golden Valley, which is where most of Canada's gold comes from. Not there's a bunch of others, but I can't remember off the, like, there's probably like an aluminium Quebec or something.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, Silver, Ontario. I don't know if that's a place. Now, Boys Town in Chicago is the LGBT village of Chicago. Actually, just to wrap up asbestos, never wrap with asbestos. Choose a different product. But to wrap up the conversation on the town of asbestos, just to be clear, apparently none of the people of the town of asbestos could agree to a new name.
Oh.
So they're going to try again.
Okay.
So when the town of asbestos decides to go with a name which isn't related to a highly cancerous material, we will provide folks with an update.
Oh, it's not even cancer. It's worse, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah. So Chicago's Boys Town, it's been promoted as, you know, the place where the boys go.
It's a historical name. In the 70s, it was an appropriate name. It was the part of town where the gay men would go to cruise.
Well, it would have been near the 80s, late 70s, early 80s. It's about 30 years old, this particular name. And it was very much a gay man's name.
Yeah.
Now,
well, it's at that time in history, it was a gay man's neighborhood.
It was a very gay man's neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now, it's in the area of North Olmsted in Chicago, but it's never really been known by its actual neighborhood name. It's only been known as Boys Town. Now, what they've decided is they did a survey, and just over the majority of the people they surveyed actually said, you know what, I'm kind of okay with it. 7,900 people they surveyed.
Yeah.
And 58 said, you know, well, actually, we like the name.
Yeah.
And honestly, when you're renaming something, the vast majority of people are like, oh, I know, I like the name. Like, I got used to it. It's what it is. But the argument being made by the business association and the local politicians is that even if a small percentage feel unwelcome there, then that's not a welcoming neighborhood because they feel unwelcomed. Ergo, you know, and if the issue is the fact that it's boys this, boys that, boys town, boys go here.
Yeah.
You know, what about the lesbians? Where are they supposed to go? Is there a lesbian town? I don't think so.
Well, the counter-argument that I read, and this actually was from I believe a bisexual woman. It was on Reddit because I saw this a few days ago. And they were saying that, like, on the one hand, it's a very, very poor reflection of the modern LGBT community, but we have very little history as it is. Do we really want to go around altering, erasing, or overwriting the little history that we do have? And they're saying that there's a way about going about doing this where, like, maybe acknowledging the historical name or enshrining the historical name or doing something, but, like, just erasing it is kind of bizarre because there's so little history as there is. So I can understand both sides of the argument where, like, there's a pretty good reason to modernize it, but there's also a pretty good reason to acknowledge the history of it.
North Olmsted today should be welcoming to all people who want to go to that neighborhood.
I think if they just did that, they just reclaimed the original name, called it that, and then, like, if there's individual, like, if there's a gay bar that typically catered to gay men and they called themselves, like, the Boys Town Bar, then don't complain because that is a historical reference and that's fine. So I think there's a way to doing this where, like, you just take the subtitle and you make it the title and you take the title and then you make it, like, the heading title instead. So
You work on documents.
I do work on documents for a living. And
you cross back. I mean, I think historical erasure is an absolutely important point because, you know, unfortunately, and it was due to the point of privilege. I mean, gay men in the 70s and 80s did not have hardly any privilege, but they had a smidgen more than, you know, queer people of color, women at the time.
And Chicago's Boys Town historically is the birth site of some disco and the house movement. The house movement comes from Boys Town. That is a scene that is black gay men. So, I mean, to say...
You say that, but there were protests in Boys Town last year in Chicago for systemic racism. Apparently, a lot of the businesses in the area have an absolute track record of not hiring black gay men.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's such a mixed bag.
Well, it's also current versus past. And, yeah. And a lot of the apparent privilege usually just came from banding together. Like, the way that they would pool their resources. And a lot of it, I think, has more to do with especially young men's willingness to take risks. So, like, starting a gay bar is a very risky thing, especially if it's the 70s, when you're probably going to get firebombed. So it's not so much do you have the resource to risk, but because they didn't, nobody did. It was just what were they willing to do the risk anyway? And it was disproportionate, but I don't know. It doesn't matter. That this is a completely different conversation. But yeah, it's – I wouldn't want to see it expunged.
Mm. Yes.
You know? Yeah. I think if they just, like – because what used to be called the Gay Village in Toronto is just now called Church Street.
Yeah. So that's the name of the actual church. Yeah. And the actual street.
The Gay Village in Montreal is now just called Sainte-Catherine.
Yeah.
And that's the neighborhood that it's in. So I think there's a way to do this and just sort of like, you know, Sainte-Catherine under title, you know.
But I think it's worth considering for these areas where, and let's look at the historical trend here, you know, the 70s. All the homos in the small towns would go to the big city because it was the only place that was safer than where they used to live.
Although small town gay bars are a real phenomenon that have been studied many times before. But
there was a big trend
that
gay folks would move to the city. And that's why we saw these places, kind of these massive congregations emerging. You're right. I think it'd be great to not lose the history of that. Now, before we jump to our first throng, Grindr has been mysteriously banning users and then ignoring requests for finding out why they've been banned. Apparently, it's been quite a widespread thing that since February, lots of people have just been mysteriously dropped off the app. Some people reckon they're clamping down on nude photos, but this is Grindr. It's kind of like the cesspool of apps.
Yep.
It was almost assumed that there would be nude photos being exchanged.
Yeah.
Some people think it has been related to a crackdown on free speech, not free speech, on hate speech. Got to clarify that. Mm. And then another group of people reckon it has to do with emojis in your sort of bio headline.
Yeah.
And some of these emojis now refer to prostitution or drug taking, and they're very concerned.
Yeah.
So they reckon if you put certain emojis in your title, the system will automatically just ban you because they assume you're trying to, you know, purchase wares of one form or another.
Or sell.
Yes, sell or purchase wares.
Or you're just looking for a special buddy to do it together with, an activity friend.
Yes, yeah. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because the maple leaf has been caught up in the brouhaha, which is this Grindr banning.
I believe it's pronounced brouhaha.
Not brouhaha.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. it has been caught up in this brouhaha of Grindr banning.
Brouhaha.
Yes, because of apparently some ne'er-do-wells have been putting the maple leaf in their little bio headline to indicate selling of cannabis. Not patriotism, as it ought to be, but rather the sales of cannabis.
And in Canada, it's decriminalized. You might be thinking, what's the big deal? But Grindr's an international app, and there's 5 countries, I think, where it's fully decriminalized and legalized. So, I mean, it's they're watching their own backs.
So, essentially, if you are a Grindr user in Canada, and you've identified your degree of patriotism with a maple leaf, we're here to let you know that some folks may believe it's related to cannabis, and you could be banned.
I mean, my answer is just use your words.
Use your words. Use your words. Use your words. I like it.
And there's such an old tradition of like every single either illegal or gray legality thing having a million names.
And such innocuous emojis are now being repurposed for these nefarious uses. Well, let's jump to our first song. I dropped my pen. Let's jump to our first song. I actually have decided that it's going to be the YMCA by the Village People. Oh, yes. We couldn't talk about it so extensively. And it is an original recording with all of the Village People, not just the
one guy. Single
carry on.
Yeah.
And we will be back just after this.
Sure you will find many ways to have a good time.
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, let's talk about something that I'm excited about. Occasionally, we're a current affairs show. We comment on LGBT news. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we dip our proverbial toe into the waters of entertainment.
Okay.
And mainly just to, you know, talk about RuPaul's Drag Race. Nowhere near as much as the rest of queer media talks about RuPaul's Drag Race. It was almost inundated by all things RuPaul. Now, let's talk about an LGBT film that's in the works featuring Colin Firth and Stanley Tucci. Now, apparently Stanley Tucci was given this this script for this particular... I love Stanley Tucci, by the way. He has played gay in a couple of movies.
Okay.
But he's just a fantastic actor. He's a straight actor. And he was given this strip, and he was talking to the either one of the exec teams, writers, directors, one of them,
mm-hmm.
and was saying, you know, can I actually suggest somebody to play opposite me? It's about a gay couple in England, and one of them is diagnosed with, Stanley Tucci's character, is diagnosed with dementia, and they take... they aim to travel around England, visiting families and friends, old places where they used to be, and, you know, to kind of reminisce whilst they can.
Right.
And over the course of the movie, you know, his memory goes due to the dementia. But Stanley Tucci's like, oh, yeah, you know, actually, how do you feel about Colin Firth playing the other character? And the director's like, oh, my God, if only we could get Colin Firth. Like, he's amazing. Like, that would be incredible.
Was the recommendation based on them being best buds or something?
Yeah. Well, apparently Stanley Tucci had already sent Colin Firth the script, and he was on board. So he's like, oh, great. So he actually signed up last night.
Okay.
So, yes. They released the trailer for it, Supernova. Check it out. And it is a heartbreaking film by the looks of it. You know, Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth... At least from what I can see in the trailer, give incredible performances. Colin Firth played the main character in A Single Man,
mm-hmm.
Who did a fun, like, that's now a gay classic in mm-hmm. terms of movie. It's a brilliant piece of acting.
I just remembered that years ago, the BBC were going to put on a production of Waiting for Godot, and they got Sir Ian McKellen in one of the roles, and... Well, no, they were going to sign him on, and he said, I'll cut my fee by, like, 20% if you have me play across from Patrick Stewart. Because they're best buds,
yeah,
basically. And I don't know if you've ever seen Waiting for Godot, but there's only two actors in the play. And they act like they're interacting with the third person, but there is no third person. So having the two of them just, like, play off each other, I like that idea of, like, actors... promoting each other when they know the chemistry is going to be good. It just occurred to me, I never saw it, and I don't know if I could even track it down.
Well, apparently Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth have been old friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're big fans of each other. They get on really well. And apparently their chemistry is what has really helped to make this film work.
Like Matt Damon and what's-his-face?
Oh,
Bad Batman.
Yeah,
He's an okay actor. He's just a bad
Batman. It bugs me, Cameron, but I've blanked on his name as well. It'll come to us. But yeah, Supernova. And it's not like a really over the top, this is a gay film. It is a story about a couple, one of whom has dementia, and just the massive impact that that has on their lives. You know, maybe it's striking a little close to home for me. And I imagine it's a story that would strike close to home for many Canadians. Because dementia is such a cruel sickness
mm-hmm.
that robs you of your memories and your identity of who you are. You know, my grandfather was diagnosed with dementia and he has it. And my grandmother had to, you know, stayed with him through that. I believe it, you know, partly made her so weak from being... woken at five times every night because concepts of time were lost, that, you know, it eventually helped to lead to a passing. But what's really quite cruel is, you know, like my uncle passed and my grandfather kept forgetting. So my grandmother would have to keep breaking the news. And it's just so incredibly cruel. And I think what this movie is doing, at least from what we can see from the early release data, is really talk to that human impact of what dementia does to people in terms of a loving couple. The description indicates that there'll be challenges, understandably.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, I think every year we get this gay movie that's really hyped up to have a big impact. I'm thinking God's Own Country from a couple of years ago. People might be thinking of, like, Brokeback Mountain, sort of these big...
Moonlight did well.
Moonlight, for example, these big gay movies that everyone expect to do well and do, in fact, do well. I would imagine that Supernova is going to land somewhere around there, probably be in a lot of the LGBT film festivals, however they take place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how that rolls out. Now, speaking of gay movies, Hallmark and a bunch of the other sort of cheap and cheerful Christmas movie places have been accused of just pretending gay people don't exist, unless they need an eccentric gay best friend, in which case the cast is aplenty.
But only for 10 minutes.
Only 10 minutes. Yeah. And there was a huge critique for years. And it seems like both Hallmark and Lifetime have heard the feedback, and have responded to it. Now, Hallmark has cast the very dreamy guy who is in Mean Girls. He was the love interest in Mean Girls. Jonathan Bennett. He's going to be playing in a Hallmark movie around a gay couple looking to adopt a first child. No further details particularly available. And Lifetime has cast a real-life couple, Ben Lewis and Blake Lee. Ben Lewis you may recognize from The Arrow, for example. And they are going to be in a movie where somebody goes back to the sort of rural neighborhood they're from and, you know, meets their childhood sweetheart that didn't know they had a crush on them. But then obstacles occur because, you know, it's a Lifetime movie. So obviously obstacles.
That's also the plot of the movie Cthulhu, where the main character leaves a small town because he's gay and he wants to move to New York. And
I was not expecting you to land at Cthulhu.
Then he goes back to his hometown to go to a funeral, and it turns out the sheriff of the town had carried a flame for him all these years. And then he goes mad because the fish people of the deep start taking over the town. So, yeah, it's a great... I like movies with gay main characters where it's not about them being gay. So this actually really fits the bill, the idea. It's really fundamentally about, like, health and mental health and memory and that kind of thing. It's watching a movie, not to belittle it, and we've talked about this before, that there are a lot of really good movies about living in the age of HIV or, you know, being a single gay man who can't find love, or being a lesbian who lives in a violent community or something like that. That every so often you just want to see a movie about
happy ending. My God.
A trans real estate agent who just can't land the big deal. Like,
that's
what I want to see.
You know, for decades, finding a gay movie that doesn't end with someone dying was really difficult.
Or them being gay was not the entire point of
the film. Yeah, yeah. They're gay and therefore must die. It's the kill the gays trope.
Or the whole movie is about them coming out, or the whole movie is about them getting acceptance with their family, or the whole movie is about them
getting AIDS. You know,
and
a lot
just,
of movies about
so AIDS. Having movies about something. That said, there's a movie from the late 90s called Jeffrey that's kind of largely forgotten. Patrick Stewart was in it as like this very flamboyant aging gay man. It was the first thing he did after Star Trek. And at one point in time, they're talking about like what are the greatest hazards to modern society, and he just, like, everyone is, like, chippering away, and then Patrick Stewart just pipes in and says, fluorescent lighting. And then that's it. And then everyone's like, yes.
It's quite hazardous, as we now know.
Anyway, unimportant.
Well,
yeah.
Let's move on from that. Actually, just to wrap about entertainment toe-dipping, Schitt's Creek, the Canadian TV show that was brought to us by the folks over at CBC, and... clean sweep of the Emmys.
Oh, yes.
All of the comedy awards. Mm-hmm. But what I want to zero in, everyone has talked about Schitt's Creek, amazing Emmys win. Jimmy Kimmel did some really bad jokes about building a Emmy-proof wall on the North border. And
most of his jokes
really didn't land well.
I've never found it
funny. He said one of the late show hosts was the only one that's American, and I believe James Cameron,
That's the director.
both of the Brits had actually become American citizens.
Right, so okay, yeah.
It's like, even John Oliver is like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, it was just so tone deaf. And saying he would report John Oliver to ICE, oh, just none of it landed well. But one of the things I want to zoom in on here with this incredibly Emmys wins by Schitt's Creek is that Dan Levy won the comedy writing Emmy for one of the episodes that really focuses...
I forgot that he's the co-writer, yeah.
One of the episodes that really focuses on that sort of loving relationship between his character and the other character on Schitt's Creek.
Jason?
Anyway, I just think it's incredible that, you know, it was a really well-written episode, and I think it kind of really captured the attention of Canadian audiences.
Yeah.
And then that global audience when it was exported to the US and the UK and other markets.
Actually, my favorite comment that I've seen from that, from the whole comedy series, is that it does not take... It's not a multi-billion dollar project to make a good show.
No.
And on a similar note, actually, I also saw something recently talking about The Drumhead, which is a classic Star Trek Next Generation episode, which is, that's the one with the, because I know you just watched it recently, there was that judge, and she kept trying to send people to prison, and it turns out that her father was a famous judge, and she was just trying to emulate him and get just as famous. Anyway, it was a bottle episode, it was all character development, dialogue. It's a sci-fi series, but that episode only cost them like $100,000 to make. Just this idea that, like, maybe we should focus on good writing, good character development, good acting, and tone it down a little bit on the mediocre CGI that will age poorly in the end anyway. And the number one reason why I'm saying all this is because when you do focus on good writing and good acting and keeping your budget moderate, you do have more spaces for meaningful storytelling. Things like this, things like Please Like Me, things like, I don't know, there's a lot of examples out there of just like bringing up difficult subjects and dealing with them in that manner.
Well, I think, it's such a great show, and I think it has shown that really powerful LGBT stories with LGBT characters, not LGBT stories necessarily, yeah, are able to do very well. Now, let's change the topic. I want to talk about conversion therapy. There was a study in the Gerontologists where they analyzed data from 1,156 queer men, so gay men, men of sex men, etc., between 2016 and 2019 from the multi-center AIDS cohort study. Nearly all of the men were over 40. In fact, I think all of the men were over 40. Typical age was about 62.
Okay.
So when they're talking about their experiences with conversion therapy, we're talking 20, 30 years ago at least.
Okay.
The most of these men experienced conversion therapy around 21, 22. That seems to be a pretty typical age for when gay men are subjected to this.
Mm-hmm.
39% had group therapy. 30% had religion therapy, sort of prayer therapy. 9% said they had gender role enforcement.
Ooh.
And 4% said they had aversion therapy. And 6% said they had pharmacological treatment.
Oh.
Yeah. So they said, and about 30% of them said that they had very little to no decision in that process. Like they were dispatched to...
So these were Canadians who got, quote-unquote, treatment.
I believe it's
Canada.
Americans. I think
okay.
But one of the big sort of takeaways is this is yet another study that has found that there has been incredible psychological impacts on it. So about 14% have reported having experienced traumatizing conversion therapy, and it has had impacts on... mental health. A lot of them reported internalized homophobia, increased impact on
happiness,
like depression, suicide ideation, and so on and so forth. In fact, there was a UK study in 2019 that had 1 in 5 therapy survivors had attempted suicide. 2 in 5 said that they had experienced suicidal thoughts. That's a huge percentage of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN issued a report saying that it should be banned globally. Now, that's more evidence. Every health organization worth its salt has said absolutely don't go anywhere near this. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
And it does more damage than it's worth.
Yeah.
You know, and, but we still have Canadians being subjected to this through, you know, thinly veiled subjected.
I think everything's closed down during current year because of COVID, but I think that's just a lucky strike. That's not because of any kind of intervention. That's not because of human rights. That's not because, you know, some association, like some medical association or some mental health association came together, like CAMH or something like that, did not come together and ban it. Like, this is just, you know, for young, well, predominantly gay men, but not exclusively gay men of conservative families, not just conservative, because conservative, there's a spectrum out there, like ultra conservative, being sent off to this sort of thing. It's tapered off this year, but not because of good reasons, because of plague. So, I mean, this is like the perfect year to do something about it.
Well, people are. So there is an organization, it's a Christian organization called the Northern Youth Program. It's run by a Mennonite, conservative Mennonite parachurch. Majority of their board are actually American, not Canadian.
Okay.
And they were among the last to run residential schools in Northern Ontario. So it was, until recently, they still operated...
Like Indigenous?
Residential schools in Northern Ontario. They no longer do that, but they are still running youth programs in Northern Ontario. And the LGBT community said, according to CBC coverage, that they convey harmful messages and may be costing lives.
Mm.
Now, this has led the Borderlands Pride in, we've spoken to them a number of times. They have issued a demand. So they're based out of Fort Francis, Ontario. Bearing in mind, there aren't that many big cities near these Northern Ontario communities.
Yeah.
And so these Borderland Pride organizations have asked that that the American members of this Christian group be investigated to see whether or not they should be allowed to travel into Canada for this kind of missionary work.
Is there a way to do that legally where you're not constraining border access because of... And this is me taking the devil's advocate position, but will they be able to say they're being oppressed because of religious beliefs?
Well, they've asked the safety minister, Bill Blair, to look into it. And one of the things they're saying is Americans who are found to be involved in suppressing or denying LGBT identities of young Canadians, in this case, vulnerable Indigenous young Canadians,
mm-hmm.
should be barred under the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act that says it's inadmissible if people are engaging in acts of violence that would endanger or might endanger the lives or safeties of the persons in Canada.
Right.
Now, that might seem a bit extreme,
yeah.
But CBC reporting has the Grand Chief of the Anishinaabe Aski Nation saying that they were concerned that the LGBT messages from the Northern Youth Programs and other groups could be contributing to the suicide crisis in the region. Now, that particular organization have said that the pamphlets that the CBC cited are no longer available.
Okay.
So they the pamphlets where it was a little bit on the nose have been pulled.
Mm-hmm.
Borderlands Pride isn't buying this. They reckon it's a cover-up. You know, just because you've tip-exed or whited out the really homophobic bits, like, you know, homosexuality is a sin, you will be punished by God. You know, I can imagine that having a bit of a psychological impact on young, impressionable LGBT teens going through counseling by evangelists from America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't imagine that that sentence ending well.
Yeah.
You know, by any stretch of imagination.
I just find it alarming that evangelism is still permitted in the modern world where...
In this case, it's being imported.
Yeah.
From the United States.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a big supporter of, I don't want to say missionary work, of humanitarian work. That there are a lot of churches that go to places that have, like, no good drinking water and then they help them build a well or something like that. Like, that kind of thing, I think, can go a long way. If done right in the right part of the world, it's very beneficial, but it's in general, it has a history of, like, you know, we're going to test out this malaria medicine on this struggling small community, because what else are they going to, are they going to say no? They're dying. They're going to say yes, because what other options they have? Mm-hmm. Like, that's exploitive. And I really, really do not.
This does sniff. It doesn't pass the sniff test.
Yeah, it really does not pass the sniff test.
An organization that ran the last of the resident, some of the last of the residential schools, which have an atrocious history, now to offer counseling, which has been billed as conversion therapy by the critics, you know, and is run by Americans, which is even more perplexing. You know, I don't think they're flying in anytime soon with the whole end of the world COVID-19 pandemic.
Don't they have to be at least 51% Canadian to be a not-for-profit? Otherwise, they have to pay taxes?
With the foreign ownership rules? I mean, that's certainly something that I believe people will be looking into, specifically around... you know, how this is doing. But they want the Borderlands Pride wants the immigration to look into it so that these indigenous youth in those areas can be kept safe here and not subjected or exposed to conversion therapy, which we know continues to harm. You know, people have... It's just
and when you're talking about barbaric. Losing lives, like, you don't have to even just focus in on people with suicidal ideation or people who successfully die by suicide. It's when if you're talking about losing a life, like, you can live to be 70 and still lose a life if over the 50 years between conversion therapy and the day of your death, you spend your entire life just keeping your head above water because you're living with trauma.
Crippled by depression. Yeah. Because the whole 50 years, you've been under the impression that God is going to punish you at any minute.
You're not writing books or getting a nice job or building your community or volunteering or making the world a better place. You are living day by day just trying to get through. And that's also a waste of human life in its own way.
Well, we will be keeping an eye on that story, and we'll be reaching out to Borderland Pride to see what their take is ahead of next week's show. We are going to jump to Nebulous Cloud by the band Mishi, and we will be back just after this.
Ooh, I want to talk about this nebulous cloud that's hanging around.
Stop.
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, every now and then we talk about flag debacles.
Yes.
The old flag debacles, as we like to call them. And that's where towns and cities are grappling with the idea of whether or not they should raise a flag in support of Pride.
Yeah.
Very often people like to see themselves represented by their local city council. If they're a veteran, maybe mm-hmm. there's a veteran's flag.
Mm-hmm.
If they are Franco-Ontarian, maybe mm-hmm. there's a Franco-Ontarian flag.
If a community has a predominantly Croatian history, having like a flag during Croatian month.
Yep, whatever it may be. Yep. Sometimes it's nice and uplifting to see yourself represented.
Yeah.
Well, the town of Mino in North Dakota has run into the old flag debacle.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been no end of amused by their particular response to this.
Uh-huh.
The first openly gay councilwoman in the whole of North Dakota was caught on camera last week responding to local constituent complaints about this pride flag raising. Let's have a quick clip here of some of her comments.
Please go ahead.
So, Mr. Walker, if you're not aware, and I think a lot of people in this room are not aware and have come here just because this is a gay issue, I am proudly the first openly elected lesbian in North Dakota. So that is why I'm not paying any heed to your crap. I am we the people. I'm the people. I live in Minot. I have a taxpayer. I am a person. I get to see myself represented on that flagpole just as much as the people who got the Juneteenth flag last month, as much as the POW MIAs will get later this month. Every single person is entitled to see themselves represented. We are not some group of people who live in San Francisco or Seattle. We are here. We are your elected officials. We are your brothers. We are your sisters. And don't tell me you're not hatred and anger. That's all I feel. I've had to listen to it for days now, as is the mayor and many of my colleagues. It is unacceptable. This city is big enough for all of us. Me having a flag flying doesn't take away anything from your rights and freedoms. But you know what it does for me? It shows me I live in a city that appreciates and embraces me and the people of my community. And that I can live here and feel safe. That's what it does. I'm sorry it doesn't make you feel comfortable. But we're here, we're queer, and we're not going away.
So the outcome of this discussion at Mino in North Dakota is that they have now effectively banned all flags.
Yeah.
Minus, yeah. You know, state, city, country flag.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody gets a flag.
Yep.
Which was really unfortunate for the NRA,
mm-hmm.
because apparently the NRA was scheduled to have their flag put up any minute now,
uh-huh.
and these anti-gay protesters in mm-hmm. the town of Mino have now lost the NRA their opportunity to fly their flag, whilst the town of Mino figures out how they're going to tackle the whole flag debacle.
I hear the NRA is collapsing on the inside. Anyway.
Well, I think they're being taken down by the Manhattan district attorney.
It's unrelated, but yeah. Which is really tragic, because when it was originally formed, it was about education and safety. It was just, it went through an identity shift in the 60s that, for the worst. But like the original, if you look at documentation of the original NRA, I wish we had
The Manhattan District Attorney's investigation is a lot of like chief executives buying themselves planes and cars and
the
amount of straight up fraud is astonishing.
The weird cuckoo bananas modern NRA came from a series of events.
Know if everyone would call them cuckoo's bananas, and that's not a position that we're officially taking.
As a corporate entity, I would stand by that, but there are members of the NRA who are just genuinely like, I want to know how to keep my gun in a locker in a safe way so that it doesn't fall out and shoot me in the head. And that's fine. That's the original purpose. It was supposed to be about gun education and safety. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But this right here, this is what I like to refer to as the second best answer, which is just no one. Just shut up.
I mean, I find it slightly amusing that the NRA lost its flag.
Yeah.
But apparently in a couple of weeks, the veterans were supposed to be getting their flag raised. And it really does put this issue into perspective.
Yeah.
The NRA, kind of funny. But when you're looking at it, that, you know, the veterans in the community of Mino, you know, for them, there's a lot of significance and importance seeing you know, the veterans flag raised in that time of commemoration. And likewise, it's about seeing yourself reflected.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's really at the crux of the issue here.
Yeah.
Either everyone gets to see themselves reflected.
Yeah.
Or no one does. Yeah. Which means that veterans don't get their flags. The NRA doesn't get their flags.
Yeah, yeah.
Because homosexuals don't get their flags.
I like the idea of having like a small garden with a flagpole on the east side of the building and a small garden with a flagpole on the west side of the building so that you can have these other, like, I don't want to call them special interests because that's often
non-state flags.
Non-state flags flying where they can't see each other. So.
Like the flag themselves are going to be insulted?
Well, no, no, no. It's if you have the pride flag up on the east side and the NRA flag up on the west side, I'm sure there are plenty of gun owners who are openly queer. But, you know, there's, you can imagine there are certain folks from one side who would naturally hate the other and vice versa. So just having, you know, a little garden and just being like, if you want to, there's a little flagpole on the side of the building, just fill in this paperwork and you get it. And that's, I think that's the solution. But like, this is the second best solution, which is just shut up. You have a building, you can build your own flagpole, you can run anything you want up there. And that's fine by me. And I think this is, it's sort of this uncompromising, like, if the kids can't get along, nobody gets the candy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting those ones. Now, we do not have time to talk about Poland, and that story has continued to develop. But I did want to talk about how the U.S. administration is handling these ideas of competing rights. Now, in the Canadian human rights framework,
yeah.
There are such things as competing rights. What happens when your right to free speech runs up against, defamation and so on, your right to be free from persecution?
Yeah, yeah.
Where does your right to freedom of religion butt up against the freedom of discrimination for being LGBT, for example?
Or somebody else's freedom of religion.
And there is a lot of work by the human rights organizations at the provincial and the federal level that works to assess and come to understandings around those competing rights.
And some of it's easy rules of thumb, like, is somebody causing harm in doing so? And some of it's way more complicated and would need like a three-part series to describe. But
that's the Canadian response, which is nuanced, intelligible. Now, the Americans, however, have decided that maybe we actually have too many rights.
Uh-huh.
Maybe some of these rights that we've gained, we just shouldn't have anymore. Or some of the people who have gained rights from discrimination, maybe they shouldn't have those.
Uh-huh.
They have proposed at the...
Who is they?
Well, they haven't listed them.
Oh.
They have proposed, it's just a nefarious they.
Okay.
They have proposed at the UN, at the General Assembly, and they're trying to convince people. They've managed to convince the amazing rights upholders of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and actually Poland. So really, the who's who of respecting human rights have signed up to back the Americans.
Is China and Chechnya?
I'm not sure about Chechnya. Most of Europe has politely left the room. They won't even entertain the discussion. And a part of what the
Finland is sitting there just as a looky-loo, so they can laugh about it later.
Actually, one of the European delegates said that, you know, we would even be in the room if they let anybody else talk.
Ooh.
Like, apparently it's a non-interactive event. More like being lectured at by Americans.
Okay.
I don't think anyone likes that. So the thing that they're proposing is they want to really push for some human rights to be a bit more important than others.
Okay.
Now, who gets the most important human rights? The Americans feel is something that they should put forward, particularly Mike Pompeo. And what they're trying to do is, because all of these crazy people have got their rights, you know, since like the 1940s, people have been free of discrimination, and that's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
So they would like us to actually go back to 1948. Let's roll back the clock on all of those people stopping being discriminated against, and let's reaffirm some good old 1940s human rights frameworks.
Now, the crazy thing, when you first mentioned this to me, because I had not come across the story, was I was thinking, like, are they talking about streamlining it? Like, putting it under subheadings to say, like, everything really boils down to 10 rights, but then when you look at that right, it explodes outwards. So you can say, like, you know, the right of the autonomous individual, and that goes into, like, health rights and independence and your ability to vote and your ability to choose your own destiny. And you can take this very broad concept and explode it into 100 other rights. Like, are they just trying to compress it so you can fit it on a poster that fits in the office? Or, like, what are we talking about? You're like, no, no. But, I mean, if they did that, that would just be, like, cleaning up.
At the end of the Second World War, there were, you know, big push. This particular one talks about sort of inalienable rights. So,
yes.
You know, the right from, you know, illegal detention and so on. And yes. There's certain rights that you have as a human anywhere in the world that yes. cannot be taken away. Since 1948, which was a bit of a while ago, we've invented these things called civic rights.
Yes.
Where things that are identities that are not something that you necessarily choose, but you can't actually be discriminated against. Weirdly, since the 1948, we have collectively decided that discriminating against someone based on their race is something that's not super cool. Discriminating just because they're a woman, also not cool.
I mean, you say that, but in the 1760s, the original draft of the Declaration of Human Rights of the French Person, which was written by the Marquis de Condorcet leading up to the French Revolution, which is actually the draft, the modern Declaration of Human Rights is basically just that. And, like, civic rights was in there as well. But, like, one of the big things that he did that they kind of forgot about, and then they put it back in later. I say, forgot about because it's between quotation marks. They kind of struck it out. One of the things that he wanted is that every citizen should have the right to vote. And then the loophole is, how are we defining citizen?
Yeah. I think even America is that they're struggling with that current definition. Now, we don't have time to get into more of this. We might reach out to some human rights lawyers and experts and flesh that out.
Mm.
But it's just important to note that the United States under the Trump administration is trying to encourage the entire world to adopt a 1948 standard of human rights. Something that is incredibly concerning. Weirdly, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and other various, you know, autocratic states love the idea.
Yeah.
But
I mean, if it was
free-thinking democracies,
a documentation audit where somebody looked at it and said, these four rights are just the same thing written four different ways, we should compress it. Like, that kind of thing, I'd be like, yeah, let's go for it, but no, that's not what we're looking at.
Well, we've run out of time. We're playing out with 21 by Little Destroyer. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thanks for listening.
Let's walk at the after party. Your drugs off my body. 6 a.m. seeing tunnel vision. I'm done. No life, who got here fastest? Your bomb, then I'm blasted. Down on my knees, seeing tunnel vision. I'm done. Tell me in the morning if I'm dead. If not, let's put it all down again. Tell me in the morning if I'm dead. If not, let's burn it down, let's burn it down, let's burn it down. Fuck me, but I'd be afraid. My head is spinning, trying to drown out the damage from when I was 21. Fuck me, but I'd be afraid. My heart is sinking, trying to drown out the damage from when I was 21. I'm making, but right now I'm breaking. Baseball bat to the television, I've come undone. Tell me in the morning if I'm dead. If not, let's burn it all down again. Drink again. I'll I'll never smoke again. I won't undress with strange women and men. I swear never again, right? I swear never again, right? I swear never again, yeah, right? I'm done, yeah, right? I'm done, yeah, right? Fuck me, but I need defense.